From 90.7 WFAE, this is Charlotte Tux. I'm Mike Collins. When we assemble our Average Joe panels, we always ask our volunteer panelists to list a few things they'd like to talk about. Sometimes they don't make statements. They ask questions like, why does a 7-year-old need a cell phone? Damn fine question. Others provide us a grocery list of topics they'd be interested in covering, from the election to the economy to education. Some give us an insight into how they're thinking. Others don't. But what we've learned over the past year of inviting a new panel of WFAE listeners on the program each month is that they aren't easily pigeonholed, that labels don't usually end up being the shorthand descriptives we think of as of them as being, and that we'll always be exposed to a few surprises in each program. And I hope that's the case this hour. Today we have four people with a wide range of ages and life experiences. One is a Democrat, another is a Democrat who is open to other ideas, and two are Republicans standing on shifting sands. Beth Johnson, or Johnston, excuse me, describes herself as a middle-aged housefrau and the COO of her own company, Johnston Enterprises, doing business as her house. She says she's fiscally conservative and personally liberal. Her heroes are George Will and Daniel Patrick Moynihan, and says that her political viewpoints as a result are a mishmash. Beth says she doesn't know yet who she'll vote for on Tuesday, but she did switch from being a Democrat to unaffiliated in 2000 so that she could vote for John McCain in that primary. Who did you ultimately vote for in that election? You don't want to say, do you?
John Kerry.
Okay. Well, now there's a good response. And just so you'll know who she is, her kids are on the front page of the paper this morning,
right.
Marching. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Esposito is a registered Republican, but says more accurately that he is a rhino Republican in name only, a retired businessman and actor and director. He believes in a woman's right to choose and separation of church and state, and dislikes what he calls the blame game that he says this country seems to be enjoying playing. Finger-pointing, he asserts, has become a sport. So today, he gets to point some fingers. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Anything you'd like to point out first?
Yeah, I'd like to point at the name subprime. Subprime crisis. Sub means under. Prime, uh-huh. I always thought, meant the prime interest rate.
Uh-huh.
What I found out later was that prime means the people who were not quite eligible for that loan size, they gave them loans because they were under being the prime customer.
Mm-hmm.
And the banks are getting killed. And I heard this morning that the number of foreclosures doubled, but they never give me the number. What's the number?
Huh. Well, we'll ask. Maybe somebody will call in and tell us, or maybe somebody from the banks will call us and foreclose on the studio before we finish. Sean Britt is a married high school social studies teacher who has a child of his own on the way. He is a Democrat and an Iraq war vet, and he says, a white guy who drives a truck and supports Barack Obama. I guess you didn't come to the Hillary rally last night.
No, I did, but I'm always open to any ideas or any discussion on what anybody has to say.
Are you one of those Barack supporters who, if he does not get the nomination, will not support Hillary?
I wouldn't say I would not. I try to go into this with an open mind. I have to look at what appeals to me about the candidate, what appeals to me about their ideas, and make that decision. You should never make a decision out of spite or out of regret for something. You should make it based on what you think is the right decision, and that's how I will. It may be McCain or it may be Hillary. I'm hoping that it'll be Obama, but we'll see.
I find this fascinating, but and I don't want to dwell on it too much right now because we'll talk about this later, but you're an Obama supporter, and you could see yourself voting for John McCain.
Right now I would have to say probably no, with regard to his stance on a few issues that have concerned me, particularly being an Iraq war vet. That's one that's a big decision right there, and right now his stance is one that I probably don't agree with. So I could very well vote for Senator Clinton if she's the nominee.
Okay. Sean is 37 years old, but our next panelist is a little more mature. Al Kranz is 78 years old and has lived in Charlotte since 1972. He's a registered Republican, originally, I presume, from the North.
Is that correct?
But he says since he moved here, He just hasn't found many Republicans he can vote for. That has nothing to do with the move, I take it.
No, just the timing.
A widower, he has four children, all of whom attended Charlotte's public schools.
Yep.
Did they, in your mind, get a good education?
They did. They did.
Okay.
Some of them started up north, but they got a good education. They've got advanced degrees. Good jobs. So.
Okay. Well, welcome to the program. Nice to have you with us. All four of you, I think you, well, you put four children to the schools here. Mm-hmm. Sean, you're a teacher in, what, Stanley County?
Yes, sir.
And you did teach for at least a year here in the CMS.
Yeah, student taught and did 6 months as a full-time sub at Independence High School.
You teach, I mean, you have children.
Mm-hmm.
Do they go to the public schools here?
No.
Is it a choice you made because you think the public schools are not good?
There were several reasons we made the choice. Primarily, the school they go to separates the sexes for math and science in middle school.
Okay.
And we have daughters, and that's a real big deal for us, is to make sure that they get the best possible math and science background they're going to get.
And did you have kids in the school, Jim?
No. My children went to school in Asheville before we moved to this area. They're grown and gone, and I have grandchildren.
What's the biggest problem, do you think, facing the public schools today? You're a public school teacher, so talk about it for a second.
Wow. That's a loaded question. You know, I think from my experiences, you talked about the blame game. You know, I think we haven't yet latched on to the idea of accountability, you know, holding not just teachers accountable, but also parents accountable, making sure the kids have all the proper things that they need when they come to school, making sure that kids are accountable for their actions and stuff, and holding teachers accountable. I think, you know, we can start doing that, then that can help. Can only help the school system. As far as the biggest problem, I mean, there's a lot of problems. There's a lot of good too. I'll be here to tell you, I'm a big advocate for the public schools because, you know, I work in them. There's a lot of good things that I see every day.
Mm-hmm. You think the school, public schools get a bad rap?
Yes.
Yes, they do. to some extent. I mean, some of it's pretty warranted. But for the most part, I think honest people are day in and day out are trying to do the best they can with what they have.
Who else said yes when I said bad rap? You did, Al.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I would like to see the teachers have the authority to make it work when the kids come there. I think we don't let them do what they can do. Part of it would be discipline, perhaps, but being able to keep the classroom running, I think the teachers should be able to do it instead of being criticized for doing, you know, saying a naughty word or something like that.
Do you get support? Because a lot of CMS teachers say they don't feel they get support.
I get, in my county, I have to say yes, I get a lot of support. My principal, my administrator, they're good people, and we do get support.
Of course, you were a parent of four kids, Al, when things were very different.
Yeah, my kids are in their 40s and 50s, so if, I have to say. But I have grandchildren, and two of my grandchildren.
So if a teacher had called you and said, Johnny is making trouble in the classroom, you would not have questioned that. You would have taken steps against Johnny. You would not have taken steps against the teacher,
right?
We
had one that did one time, and we said, well, then kick him out.
You know. My, how times have changed.
Yeah.
I think teachers should make about three times what they make today.
Oh,
but
amen.
It should be difficult to be a teacher, and you should be tested every year and constant growth.
But it is difficult to be a teacher, isn't it?
Well, the argument I make a lot of times, you know, you take, let's say, a person coming out of college with a chemistry degree. And he's got he or she's got the option going to work for DuPont, making a substantial amount of money, or choosing to go in a profession like teaching. I mean, obviously, what are they going to choose? Would probably to go work for DuPont or something. I mean, it at some level, we got to start realizing.
Is it money or respect or a combination of?
It's a combination of everything. I mean, money can't solve all the problems, but I think if you want to attract the best, you've got to be able to reward them.
Beth, are we asking schools to do too much? You have said that schools are not DSS. What's your take on all of this?
I think we are expecting the schools to be the nanny. They're expected to be the parent, the family, the advisor, the mentor, and it's such a complex situation. It can't be solved by simply throwing money at it. You can't solve it by simply throwing a lot of staff at some of these schools. It's just so much to the problem. But it's social engineering at its worst. And the schools and the teachers are expected to be all things to all children, and the kids come into the schools from such a variety of backgrounds that you've got in a kindergarten class kids who are reading and kids who literally don't know how to sit still in a circle. And you expect these teachers, and given the financial situation of teaching, there are a lot of them young teachers, they're not experienced, and they're thrown into these classrooms with maybe an assistant, maybe not, and it's just crazy.
Is there an answer to the problems?
Is there an answer? No, there are many answers.
Okay.
But I don't think you can look at it and say, well, we have to throw money at this school because of this and that school because of that, and the schools have to provide this and this and this and this. But somebody's got to do it. And so many of these kids, aren't getting what they need to be prepared for school, and it's a mess.
Al, perhaps the benefit to age is perspective, and you've been around long enough to see this in the long term. Where did we go wrong? Where did things begin to change in your mind?
I think largely when we began to expect the teachers to be, you know, what she said, a nanny. Teachers should be there to teach, not necessarily to make them into better people or do that sort of thing. They should be there to teach, and that's all they should have to do. And I think now we expect teachers to do way too many things that aren't any of their business.
And Beth, you've called the public schools wretched, and yet your kids attend private schools. So where does that opinion come from?
We spent a year or two in the public schools.
Okay.
And we were in very good public schools.
Here?
Here. Oh, yeah.
But they're wretched, you said.
I said they had problems, and they are wretched to an extent in the sense that there's so many schools that are physically wretched.
Physically,
they're horrible. They're falling to pieces, and we're building these little mini palaces out in wherever they're building those things out in the burbs, and they're fighting over the gyms and the this and the that, and there's schools that don't have ceilings. This is not right.
You taught in CMS for about a year, and you described this, Sean, as a year you'd like to forget. I only have about a minute left. Why?
Well, okay, real easy. I did my student teaching, and I got done, and I was asked to take over for a person who quit mid-year. And I said, great, I'll do that. And I got subpay, and on the promise said, okay, we'll pay you full-time pay, because I was getting there at 6:30 in the morning and doing bus duty and doing all the other things that are required, making lesson plans. I get to the end of the year, and they said, well, that's not the case. And I just felt that I didn't get treated.
And that was a long time ago under a different regime.
Yes, it was.
I want to point that out. Yeah. You say, I only have about 10 seconds, but Al, you say get rid of everybody on the school board except for Joe White. Why?
Yeah. Well, because I think they're not a good role model for the kids. I don't think they should be able to see them the way they behave.
All right.
That's all, except Joe White.
We have to take a break. Our four average Joes, Al Krantz, Sean Britt, Jim Esposito, and Beth Johnston are with us. We'll continue in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Our program is made possible in part today by 10,000 Villages offering handicrafts from around the world for Mother's Day, including jewelry, personal accessories, and home decor. 10,000 Villages for Mother's Day at Cotswold Village Shops. And by Carolina's Medical Center, recognized by the National Research Corporation's Survey of Area Residents as a preferred hospital for 9 years. CarolinasMedicalCenter.org, uncompromising excellence, commitment to care. Coming up tomorrow on this program, Peter Reinhardt, our chef on assignment from Johnson & Wales, is back for his monthly visit. And this time around, we'll look at what it takes to open, maintain, and operate a restaurant. Restaurants come and restaurants go, and there are lots of important, difficult decisions that happen between the time the doors open and the time the doors have to close for one reason or another. And he's bringing along with him three people who run very different restaurants or restaurant chains in this city, and we'll meet them tomorrow at 9.
A draft report by the National Toxicology Program at NIH found there is some concern that exposure to BPA, a chemical found in many household products, including some water and baby bottles, could lead to human health risks. Questions raised by the findings, the Diane Rehm Show, Tuesday.
at 10 on WFAE.
Hi, this is Steve Inskeep with Morning Edition from NPR News. Before you crawl into bed tonight, rest assured that while you're sleeping, people from NPR News are awake all around the world. From Baghdad to your backyard and all points between, you can tune in tomorrow morning and get prepared for the day ahead. Wake up to the world with Morning Edition from NPR News. Sing this
lullaby. With regional news, weather, and traffic, weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and we're here with our Average Joes, a new panel every time we do this. This time around, Beth Johnston, who is a 40-something mom and who also blogs for WBTV's Campaign Carolina's website. How many have you written for them so far?
I don't know.
And is this a gratis thing that they have you doing?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so typical of them. I used to work there, I know. Jim Esposito is with us. He's a retired businessman and actor. Sean Britt is a social studies teacher, truck driver, Iraq vet. That's kind of summing up your life in a very short amount of time. And Al Krantz is retired. What did you do before you retired, Al?
Before I retired, I taught at CPCC.
Oh, really? What did you teach?
Computers.
So you know what you talk about when you're talking about education because you're seeing the products of the public school system as they
come. Well, from the CPCC standpoint, yeah, I was not a teacher before that.
Okay. And what did you do before?
I taught there for 12 years. I worked for a computer manufacturer.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about something different. Let's move to crime and poverty. You were involved in that march downtown last night to the city council meeting because we've had a rash of crime that has filtered into areas that have been seemingly crime immune until now. And some have called for better police protection, saying that there's too much emphasis on community policing, not enough on cracking down on criminals. What were you asking for last night?
We were asking for the city to stop making excuses, to admit there's a problem, and to take some steps to effect some change so that we're safe. I mean, people don't feel safe.
Do you feel safe?
Where I live, yes. But coming into Charlotte, I mean, just today I saw off Independence Boulevard the crime unit lab, which is, I assume, for something pretty bad, pulled off the road, and they were doing work near a motel there. So, yeah, I mean, I know what's happening around here.
You feel safe, Al?
Yeah, I do.
Yes,
do?
I do.
Do you think that this is somewhat blown out of proportion by the media, or is it simply shocking because there are places like Dilworth in which you feel this ought to be a safe neighborhood, and there have been crimes in Dilworth, some remarkably shocking crimes, actually, in Dilworth. Is that part of it?
I think that the problem is that the crime is coming closer to the neighborhoods you don't think of as being crime-ridden, but also that what's happening is either not being reported in the media or it's being reported so inaccurately that it sort of loses all of its teeth. And, you know, the emails start going round and round about this is what you saw on TV, is what you read in the paper. This is what actually happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
And you get these things from people who are not, you know, some crazy lady who didn't take a Prozac that day, and they're not some crazy guy. And they're just, you know, and what you hear from the police chief is, we don't have a problem with gangs. We don't have this problem. Well, the reality is the banks were having a tough time recruiting. The larger companies are having a tough time recruiting because nobody wants to come live here.
That's not true.
Yeah, it is.
That's not true.
But it is.
It can't be true.
But it is true.
Beth, it can't be true.
And you know why? You tell me it's not true because that's what you saw in the paper.
No, it's because I do this show every day, and I talk to people who are involved in banking and industry and education, and the schools are growing by leaps and bounds because people are moving here. Now, it may be true that they don't want to move here, but they are moving.
They are moving here, but they do not want to move here.
Is it not naive to really expect the government at any level to protect you? They cannot protect all 300 million of them.
You know, they can't. On the other hand, when you've got somebody out on the street who's got 60, you know, these four people who broke into the guy's, who tried to break into the guy's house that was in the paper the other week. He was studying. He got his gun. He called the police, and he got the tag, and they caught the four people in the car. Among the four of them, there were 64 felony counts against them.
Well, that I think is the problem.
And that's the problem.
There's the problem.
And
the problem,
problem is
people keep getting out of
they
jail.
They keep getting out.
And doing it over and over again because we don't have enough space in the jails. It all goes back to education, by the way. But
that goes back to money, too. Do we want to spend the money to keep them incarcerated?
You know, we do, actually, but we can't seem to get any from Raleigh.
I don't know about that.
You know, to kind of back up some of what she was saying, my wife's, her best friend lives in a neighborhood kind of outside Charlotte. I don't really want to say the neighborhood. It's a pretty nice neighborhood, but they've had to go, her friend and her husband's had to go through and put all these measures on their house, security systems, because in broad daylight, people have been breaking in the neighborhood.
Right.
And taking things and stealing things and, you know, just pretty bold acts. And, you know, that's just something that it kind of took me back for a minute. You know, you think in a lot of these neighborhoods and stuff, there's a sense of security there, but it's not.
I said a second ago that it's tied to education, which it is. It's also tied to the fact that there's not enough money for incarceration. There's not enough money for the court system to prosecute these people or to keep up with them because they keep getting released and committing crimes. And when you keep getting released after doing a crime, it becomes relatively clear relatively quickly that there is no penalty. So why not commit the crime? And the other problem could be the recession. Many of us have not felt it yet, although we keep being told that we soon will, and the rest of the country is, but people in the lower socioeconomic levels probably are feeling the effects of this. And when people are hungry and can't pay the rent, they get desperate. Is that part of the problem?
Well, you know, I saw the other day I was watching Chicago News Channel, I think WGN and one of those, and it was talking about just the number of murders in Chicago this past month. And it's, you know, it's kind of connecting that, okay, this could be related to economic conditions right now. You know, a lot of people talk about, well, in the 90s, crime dropped so much drastically. Well, people were working. You know, and now, I think a lot of it is tied to economic conditions.
And you have said, Beth, we are in big trouble unless we can figure out a way to eliminate homelessness and poverty. And yet you described yourself as a Jeffersonian, but Thomas Jefferson's philosophy was one of reason and individualism and liberty and limited government. So is it the government's job to eliminate homelessness and poverty, or is it some other entities?
It's not the government's job to eliminate homelessness and poverty and all the ills of the world, but since the government has had a fair hand in creating a lot of the problems we're having now, I think that a lot of the social programs that started in the 60s, we're reaping the results now.
Are you sure you're a Democrat?
No.
Okay.
Look, I'm a Southerner. I was a Democrat because that's what we do.
Okay. A yellow dog Democrat who's kind of moving in other directions.
My husband's a Republican.
You want to chime in on this, Jim? Because you're being relatively quiet here.
Well, the government, too many of us, I think, expect the government to protect us, to take care of every social ill, and they just can't do it. We have to do it ourselves through whatever organizations, from local all the way on up. It's so easy to point a finger. That's one of the topics I put up is the blame game. I don't like to blame. Let's find out what the problem is and get together and solve the problem. Mm-hmm. Figure out what caused it and try to prevent it from happening again. And then finally wait, who did this, who did what, and let's take care of that. So it all comes down to education again, as you said earlier. And if we need to educate our kids as best we can, we need to make it difficult to be a teacher, as I said earlier, and to, how do I want to put it, to weed out some teachers. Once they get tenure, they're there forever. And whether they're a good teacher or not, what makes a good – I'll ask you, Sean, what's a good teacher?
That's a good question. You know, someone obviously who's passionate about what they're talking about, someone who gets in there every day and, you know, whether they're 20 years into a career or 2 years in a career, that when they stand up there – and tomorrow I'll be going over what am I going over tomorrow? The start of the Cold War. And I'll talk about Truman and some of the things he had to deal with and kind of have a little passion behind it. I think kids pick up on that. Kids notice this guy loves math. This guy loves history. This guy, he's into it, then I'm going to get into it.
What grade do you teach?
Mostly juniors and quite a few seniors.
So do they understand, do they like history? Do they understand a reason for knowing history? Or was it like a lot of kids when I went to school? Why do we have to know this?
You know,
do they know that Truman was the president before Lincoln? Do they know that?
Well, you know, I think what I try to do, and I tell this to them on day one, I don't expect a lot of these kids that in 20 years, if I pass them on the street, if they know that, Truman enacted this, you know, or tried to pass health insurance and it failed, his fair deal didn't work. And I don't, the details of it, what I try to do is let them say, you know what? These are people throughout history, particularly, you know, like the Trumans, the Lincolns, and all this, that can teach you a lot about your own self, can show you how to deal with your own adversities. And that's the lesson that you can learn from subjects like history. Not that you should know this act or this date. It's important that you're aware of the things that happen in our society, but at the same time, learn something from these people. And you know, we try to do that.
A good teacher is somebody who imparts to the student, no matter what subject, a love of learning.
Yeah, exactly.
Inspired.
There has to be a level of inspiration there. And if somebody comes in there and in day one, they just kind of have the attitude that, okay, one, you got to like kids. You know, I mean, you really got to like being around young people. And sadly, I've seen some people in my profession that I'm like, you don't like young people. Why are you here? You know, it's important that you do. You got to be an advocate for those people. And they know that.
Al?
Yeah, I was thinking when he was talking about that, like in kids, I taught at CPCC. And mm-hmm. Of course, that's a whole different area. You have to like everybody there because you have students from, 15 and 16 up to 80.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to get along with all of them. And I think I have great admiration for the students at CPCC. So many of those people are young people, young women, or sometimes young men supporting families. These are kids in school who have to get up and worry about getting their kids to a babysitter, keeping a car running, doing all the things that our high school kids never have to think about.
Yeah.
And they do it. And they work at it. Mm. And they're trying to make a little better life for themselves than they had. And I have great admiration for them.
Al Krantz is a retired individual, the oldest person on our panel. You don't mind my saying that.
Not at all. I'm proud of it.
78 years old, raised 4 children who are all successful. He describes himself as a Republican who's had difficulty since 1972 finding a Republican to vote for. Sean Britt is a Democrat, an Iraq vet, a social studies teacher. Jim Esposito is a registered Republican, but also somebody who's, he says, Republican in name. Only a retired businessman, and Beth Johnston is a Democrat, independent, and a blogger for, well, that's how you described yourself, as an independent-leaning Democrat, or a former Democrat. Yeah, I've got it in writing.
Former
Democrat? We'll look it up in the break.
You do that.
I'll look it up in the break.
You do that.
And she blogs for WBTV on their Campaign Carolinas page, which leads us to the election.
Mm-hmm.
I've just given out all of your political affiliations. We tried to balance this panel, and we did best we could. So who will you be voting for in the primary, if you'll be voting in the primary, on Tuesday, Jim?
Senator Obama, if I can, but I'm a registered Republican, so I don't know if I can in the state or not.
Will
to
that
be
follow
with
through
you.
In the fall if Hillary
Absolutely.
Clinton gets the nomination? Will you be voting for Hillary as opposed to John McCain if you're a Republican?
Oh, boy, that's a tough one. I don't like her very much. I don't.
Because?
Oh, this experience business she's been pushing all along, I don't think she has it. I mean, just because you're the wife of the president doesn't mean you have experience. You have experience being his wife. But she doesn't have that much experience, so trying to make that her one of her key reasons to vote for me, I just don't buy it. And I just never have cared for her all that much.
Okay.
I can't think of anything else.
Al?
Yeah, well, I'm still a registered Republican, so I guess if I had to vote, I'd vote for McCain. So far as the eventual vote in November, actually my favorite – I could be happy with any one of the three.
Really?
Yes, I could, really.
Okay.
I could, yeah. But my favorite would be, Senator Clinton.
Okay.
And then, I like what she says. I've really kind of always
liked
her. What
about her experience level or her claims to experience?
Well, she's been around it a lot closer than anybody else.
Okay.
You know, And then number two for me would be, you know, Obama. I'd have to consider whether it would be Obama or McCain.
Okay.
I don't know how that would go.
Sean?
I've already voted.
Oh.
On Friday with early voting. And I cast my vote for Senator Obama.
All right.
And, you know, I started giving to his campaign $10 a month. I'm one of the, you know, the small donors that give. I give $10 a month. And it's not really a knock against Ms. Clinton or McCain or any Republican. I just kind of like the guy and his message. I listened to him in 2004 at the Democratic Convention. I said, you know, this is someone who seems pretty sincere and pretty straightforward, and I kind of paid close attention to him.
You were 37 when we were born?
1970.
So you don't remember Martin Luther King,
Robert Kennedy. And this is kind of what he's addressed, right. You know, particularly, it kind of pained me yesterday, all the news coverage there was about his pastor and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. I didn't grow up, and I think Senator Obama kind of alluded to this. He didn't grow up in those struggles of the 60s, and we're kind of a different generation the way we view
that. So are we witnessing the same thing we witnessed to a certain degree in the first Clinton election, when there were these big generational differences? He was the baby boomer presidential candidate that didn't go through World War II and didn't have major background in the military. This is another generational shift?
I think right now, yeah, we're getting close to that.
I want to come back to Reverend Wright, but before we do, I want to give who you voted
sure you
for,
will.
Obama.
Despite Reverend Wright's comments.
You know what? I'm sorry. That's just the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
I agree. Who cares?
Who cares? We've had ministers at our church that everybody sort of goes, ew. And you keep going. What his pastor says is not who he is.
Well,
it does not define him.
How do you explain the fact that Reverend Wright has been on television all weekend?
I think Reverend Wright's out for Reverend Wright, and I think at this point he didn't really care too much about Senator Obama.
How do you explain that? Here's a guy who spent his time in the pulpit fighting for African American rights and telling it as he saw it in terms of how America has treated African Americans, and here we have a guy who could be the first African American president in the history of the country, and it's almost as though he's sabotaging him.
I don't think it's painful to watch. It was painful to watch yesterday. But it's at the same time, I think she's right. I think he's out to defend his name. And at some level, they're entitled to defend his name.
And what should Obama's response to this be? Because some pundits are now saying he is not a fighter and therefore he can't be president, whereas Hillary is out there, you know, slugging back shooters.
What he's doing. He's just letting go.
To obliterate Iran. And
key word there, Mike.
Don't think
pundits.
That Obama does himself any favors by dropping to the level of Reverend Wright.
Exactly. Because Obama goes to church every Sunday and sits there, is he listening to his political message? I thought you were to go to church to get your spirituality lifted and talk about to parables, etc.
When all that came out, I got his book. I had a copy of it, and I looked back through it, and I listened to a lot of his speeches. I read some of his writings. You know, I didn't find one thing in his message that was very similar to what we saw in those YouTube clips.
Okay, we got to stop. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more in just a second. Our Average Joes continue on WFAE. Our program is made possible in part today by Sedgefield Interior Landscape, specializing in plant design, installation, and continuous maintenance for business. Information available at SedgefieldInteriorLandscapes.com. And by Womble Carlisle, sponsoring the Mid-Atlantic Venture Association's Capital Connection Conference, where Charlotte companies meet capital and strategic partners. May 27th and 28th in Baltimore. Info at CapitalConnections.org. Coming up on the Diane Reem Show at 10 o'clock, a draft report by the National Toxicology Program found there is some concern that exposure to BPA, a chemical found in many household products, including some water and baby bottles, let me look at my water bottle, could lead to human health risks. We'll talk about questions raised about the findings at 10 o'clock on the Diane Reem Show. And then at 11 o'clock, former President Jimmy Carter explains how his mother influenced his life's work. He also talks about his recent trips abroad promoting peace and democracy. He has a new book called, it's not called that. It's called A Remarkable Mother. And the 39th President of the United States joins Diane Reem at 11 o'clock. We will continue our conversation with our four volunteer WFAE listeners. We call them our Average Joes and an Average Jane here this morning. Beth Johnston, Jim Esposito, Sean Britt, and Al Krantz. We'll talk about the war in Iraq. We'll talk about several other things, and we'll continue our conversation about the upcoming election and primaries and the candidates. Stay with us.
Next week's primary in North Carolina will decide nominees in the races for U.S. Senate and governor. Listen to WFAE all this week during Morning Edition and All Things Considered for profiles of the major candidates in those statewide races. You can also hear these and other election-related reports at WFAE.org.
On the next Fresh Air, our classical music critic Lloyd Schwartz talks about editing a new collection of poems by Elizabeth Bishop. And psychologist Dr. Dan Gottlieb describes making peace with his damaged body, a body which he believes is now wearing out. A 1979 car accident left him paralyzed from the waist down. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air coming up today at noon here on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with our Average Joes this month, among them Beth Johnston, who I described a minute ago as a Democrat-leaning independent, and she corrected me, and I said, no, I've got it documented. Well, I was wrong, because here it is on paper. She says, I am a mishmash of political viewpoints and have no idea who I'll wind up voting for in either primary or general election, but I did switch from being a Democrat to unaffiliated in 2000. Darned if you aren't right about yourself. Rats.
I hate it when that.
Al Krantz is also with us, with Sean Britt and Jim Esposito. Jim, you have said just a moment ago, and I was going to get to this, you have said that you're a Republican in name only, and that you told us that John McCain is the sacrificial lamb in this election.
Yes.
How so?
Well, I don't think isn't a young go-getter Republican out there who would have a prayer to follow up the Bush administration. Anyone who would want really, really want to get in there just didn't think they had a chance. So McCain's got the nomination. He's going to fight.
Do you think all those people like Mitt Romney and Mike Huckabee didn't think they had a chance?
Oh, they did sort of for a while. But when it came down to I think the Republican National Committee knows that they can't win in November.
Really?
I think so. Oh, they're not going to say it to you or any mainstream media person at all. They're not going to say those words. It's what I think. I could be wrong,
okay,
but that's what I think.
Al?
It's quite possible that, like Jim said, that the Republican National Party put him in there as a sacrificial lamb, but he could surprise you.
Yeah, because people are saying that the Democrats are chewing each other alive,
yep,
and making it very easy for the Republicans to take some time and look good in this contest. You think they're chewing themselves up, eating their young?
That's possible, and maybe he's just got more going for him than anybody gave him credit for. I don't know.
You have a point of view on this, Beth or Sean?
I don't believe that the Democrats are necessarily eating each other alive. I think that what this is doing is giving them some fortitude they're going to need for the general election, whoever's the nominee. I don't think that they've had very tough, as a party, they've not had particularly difficult run-ups to conventions in the past few years. And I think this is giving them some good experience in a general election, because they've not really, you know, you sort of had your anointed one for so long in the Democratic Party that the primaries were kind of beauty contests, and you had.
Do you think that Hillary has a point when she says there's nothing the GOP smear machine can throw at me that they haven't already thrown at me and that I haven't already answered?
No, I don't. I think they've got plenty of stuff on her. They're just sitting on it and waiting for it to go.
I was going to say, I've got one word. It's called Bosnia. So, I mean, as if...
Yeah.
I mean,
but isn't that over? Hasn't that been cleared up?
Well, yes, but trust me.
Nothing ever gets cleared up for the Republicans. They just keep digging and going and digging and going and
this fight right now between the Democrats is making people nervous. Yeah, sure it is. But when it comes to the election in the fall, I'm sure by September, if the economy is still somewhat in the tank, and people won't admit it, but it's surely getting that way, and this war in Iraq is continuing, to kind of the pace it is. I think either Clinton or Obama will have a good argument against either
and
McCain.
Didn't they over the weekend, the two of them both say that regardless of which one gets the nomination, they're trying to stop eating their young and saying
that
we will support whoever it is.
Except when she won the Pennsylvania primary, people said it was because middle class, working people who are in fear of their jobs, etc., are not going to vote for a black man. They'll vote for her, but they won't vote for Barack Obama. Do you think that's true? Is race or gender a real factor in this?
It's a factor, but I don't think it's as real as the pundits say it is on all the news networks.
Is that going to fill the airtime?
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious. I mean, who thought Obama was going to win Pennsylvania? I mean, all honesty, that was a tailor-made state for Clinton. I mean, you know, they
who
can spin it all they want, but
which
that
one of them, which one of them will take North Carolina, do you think?
Well, this is a state that looks in Obama's favor, but, you know, I'll give the Clintons this much. They're making a big push for it, and having the governor come out today and endorsing Senator Clinton.
Did he do it already? They said
he was going to. I don't know that that's as big a plum as it could be in other states.
I didn't know we had a governor.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's been pretty invisible for his entire
term. Yeah, he's not been the best governor we've ever had, and I think that...
I'm sure you're getting some calls right now.
It's a non-event to have him endorse her.
So it doesn't matter. I believe that John McCain is 72. I could be off.
Yeah.
You're 78,
yes.
Al. Is John McCain too old to run or too old to serve, or is it immaterial?
I think somewhat it's going to depend on who he gets for running mate, because I think we have to consider. You know, I don't know if I'm going to live through the next 8 years. Well, of course, I'm older than he is. But I don't know that he's going to live necessarily through 4 or 8 years. And I think we have to consider who he gets for a running mate. And that could make a big difference.
Who would be a good running mate for him, in your view? Okay. This election looked like it was going to be a referendum on the war, and it may yet be. But the other issues are cropping up, like the economy and the foreign oil dependence and health care. Even health care has kind of been pushed to a back burner recently. What is the focus? What should the focus of this debate, this election debate, be about? Those issues or something else?
I would say, the war. I mean, really, if you want to look at a lot of the economic condition that we're in, I think some of it needs to be put on the spending and our focus on the wars. It's really hurt us in many ways. So, yeah, I think, economy should be, because people are hurting. But I think a lot of it kind of goes back to this 5-year involvement we've had in this war that's just cost us a lot in terms of lives and money.
I don't know that it's necessarily the war as the war. I think there's a lot of stuff going on that's contributing to the fact that we're sort of falling down the tubes. But one of the biggest problems we have is internal, and our economy is going to pieces because we don't do anything anymore except service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're very service oriented. We don't make anything. And so we're sort of passing our money around amongst ourselves, and the Chinese are very slowly buying us.
Yeah. There's a Republican activist, and I wish I could remember his name. He was on Morning Edition the other day who has written a book about this, saying that the fact that when a country stops manufacturing and starts simply being a debt servicer and a policeman to the world, that is the end of it. That's the beginning of the end. It happened for the Dutch. It happened for the British. And now it looks like it's happening to us, and that the Asian economies will pick up the slack and become the world leaders. This will not be the second American century. Does that worry you?
It does, because I have children, and I'm concerned about the world they're going to inherit. I'm concerned about the country that is going to land on their feet to fix the problems that we are too incredibly too self-centered to look beyond our own little backyards and say, you know, it's easy to say, well, this is the problem, this is the problem, this is the problem. The thing about the oil is not that it's this or that. It's that all of a sudden India and China want it too.
Yeah.
And now they can pay for it.
And we have not been doing some of the things we probably could have been doing
to
wean ourselves from oil.
Yeah.
Are you willing to pay higher gas prices if part of the gas price goes to research and development of alternative fuel sources? Or are there other things that we can and should be doing?
I'm going to England next month, and gasoline is the equivalent of $10 a gallon.
Right.
They've been European continent has been paying way more for gas. We've been lucky all these years. We're probably going to get this.
And they're paying more for gas in gasoline taxes, not because it costs more, but
exactly.
Because it's, they too have not developed alternative sources of energy with that money. So, you know, what have they been doing with that money? Supporting the other parts of the economy?
Well, they have socialized medicine for one.
Yeah. Plus their income tax
is
high.
And they have incredible public transportation.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we try to build a light rail line and people moan and groan and complain about it as a boondoggle and a waste of money. Was it?
No.
Okay.
But the same person complains about, you know, greenhouse gases and yet they want to drive their car every day.
Al?
Yeah, you're going to England next month. I'm going to Germany, and I go there periodically. And their gas prices are very high. And you drive on that Autobahn, and maybe you're going 100 and 120 miles an hour, and cars are going by you like you're standing still, and everybody's doing that. And that's got to be using a lot of gas.
Are you doing 120 miles an hour or 120 kilometers?
No, I'm talking about miles.
Wow. All right. Now, Iraq. It's okay. The elephant in the room.
Yes.
What should we do? We broke it. Do we have a responsibility to stay there and fix it?
No.
Should we get out as soon as possible? If we do and the country goes into chaos and the Middle East goes into chaos, are we not to blame? And it's not going to cause a bigger problem for us down the road. What should we do, Jim?
You're not going to like this, but we have to stay. I think we have troops. I've actually said that we have to stay.
So I don't.
We have troops
like
all over Europe. They've been there since the war. We have troops in Korea, Japan, all over the world.
Yeah.
We have troops.
Should
but,
we?
But in troubled places, Korea and
why are
and,
we
and
in?
Europe.
Why are we in Japan? Why are we in Germany?
I
still?
Think we need to be out of there. We need to get out of there.
60 years have gone.
Yes,
by.
Exactly. We should be out of there, but we need to stay. We started it, whether you like it or not. Why? I don't want to get into that. We're there. We need to stay and help them.
Put it together. But we're trying to do that and have screwed it up every
royally
from Sunday.
Royally.
You were there, Sean.
Yes. Yeah, I was there in 2003, 2004, actually 365 days. And you know, the comparison, not to argue with you, but I guess at some point about Germany and Japan and all this, there is a little difference between helping a Christian nation like Germany rebuild after the war and then, say, occupying a Muslim country for a substantial amount.
We're not occupying Germany or Japan, but we're there.
But we're there. But I would say that the view from most people in the Arab world is that we're in Iraq as an occupation, not there as to benefit them in any way, shape, or form. And that can't help us in our long term.
So if we pulled out today, what would happen?
I don't know. I mean, the same people are telling me that is the doom and gloom if we pull out today were the same people who told me 4 or 5 years ago that if we don't go in there, they'll have these wet. There'll be a smoking gun over New York. So,
When you went in there, did you believe in the cause, or did you change your mind?
You know, I joined the Army shortly after 9/11 at 30 years old, and for a lot of reasons. One of which, you know, I felt okay, maybe I could do this, I should do this, and I was single, so I could do it. But and I went, you know, because at some level you believe the authorities that put you in a position. You believe that. You want to believe your president. You want to believe the people, you know, like Colin Powell. But it's clear over time looking back that maybe their decisions were not that wise.
Well, Beth has said that George W. Bush and Dick Cheney should be tried as war criminals. You agree with that?
I wouldn't go that far, but you know, I think there needs to be accountability. Yeah, I think everybody needs held accountable.
While you were there, did you get to sit down and talk with Iraqi people?
A lot.
Through an interpreter? And what were their feelings?
Well, a lot of them speak a little better English than you. I mean, they do speak English. You see that when you go to foreign countries. At first, you got the sense that, okay, this is happening. Now, granted, I was there that first year, and I think things have changed quite a bit. You know, I think what I found from these people, they were good. Most of them are good people that just want to be left alone, raise their family, and build their own society. And, you know, I think they're entitled to that.
But we have these two factions over there who are tearing each other apart and that were obviously kept in check by Saddam Hussein. We've removed him from the equation. If we remove ourselves, aren't we leaving innocent people in the midst of chaos?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you on that, but you know, we can't go around and police the entire dispute between every groups there is.
Al.
Yeah, I think there's a little difference between saying we're going to be there for the next 10 or 20 years and that we're still in Germany or Japan. Nobody's shooting at us over in Germany and Japan now. They're killing our guys.
Yeah.
You know, I just...
Four died yesterday.
Yeah, last Saturday attended my grandson's graduation from boot camp, and I got a kind of a different view on that right now.
I think the thing we miss a lot, too, and is the strain that is put on our military. I remember, and I'll never forget this story. September when I was there, I went in, took some Marines out of hauled their equipment back, and I could just see how happy they were. Okay, 7 months I've been here, I'm going home. Mm-hmm. And how upset I wasn't going home. Then we get to February, 365 days is when I'm leaving. I'm getting all my equipment ready at the Kuwaiti Naval Base, and guess who I see coming back? Mm-hmm. Those same Marines. And that was in 2004. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine how many times over and over these guys had to do it. And, you know, at some time, somebody's got to stand up and say, you know what? We got to look out for those guys.
Speaking of looking out for people, I want to run out of time before we talk about this. Support for veterans. We've heard about these horrible problems at the Walter Reed facility in Washington. Continued reports around the country of veterans.
Fort Bragg yesterday.
Not being able to get resources or benefits or help for PTSD or other things that they suffer from. They have to fight with the government for all kinds of things that really are, or if they're not, ought to be their rights. And then we have this thing called the new GI Bill. We've had several GIs on this program talking about the need for more support for a new GI Bill because the old GI Bill has not kept up with inflation. And yet John McCain, a decorated war veteran, running for president, is not in support of this bill. How do you explain that?
The DOD, the Defense Department's not behind this bill.
Because
their fear is that, okay, if we offer all these benefits, then what are their officers going to start doing? What are their enlisted men? They're going to get out and go take advantage of the GI Bill, and rightfully so. And it could deplete.
So it worked after World War II because we were
taking downsizing.
Downsizing
we're out,
the military.
And we say, here, get a college degree.
Is there something in between the new GI Bill and providing what we've promised to these guys who have risked their lives and risked and come back injured in many cases from Iraq and Afghanistan? Is there something in between that?
But, you know, I think, really, in all honesty, I think it could be more of a recruiting tool. You tell some guy, hey, you want to go to Harvard, you spend 4 years in the Army, we're going to pay for it, full, everything. I mean, that's, to me, more of a powerful tool to pull them into the Army.
There was a story on ABC News last night of a guy at West Point who, when he graduates, will go play professional football. Yeah, and in the offseason, he'll be a recruiter, and the military sees that as valuable.
Yeah, I saw it last night, and they do.
Okay.
It's going to help.
I want to thank all four of you. It's been an interesting program. Beth Johnston, Jim Esposito, Sean Britt, Al Krantz, our average Joes and James. We didn't get to all the topics, but we got to a lot of them. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our senior producer is Wendy Herkey. The associate producer is Tim Ross. Aaron Sutton is our research assistant, and our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks archives, upcoming shows, and podcasts, go to WFAE.org.
And our program is made possible in part today by U.S. National Whitewater Center. Run, bike, paddle, and climb on over 300 acres of woodlands, 15 minutes from Center City, Charlotte. A recreation facility for family outings, social events, or a bite to eat. USNWC.org. And by Opera Carolina, presenting The Fledermausse, the comic operetta about love, deception, and the fickle nature of destiny. May 1st, 3rd, and 4th. Information available at 704-372-1000.
A few years ago, writer Tony Horowitz visited Plymouth Rock, where he got a chuckle.
Many visitors think Columbus sailed to America, dropped off the pilgrims, and sailed home. They learn about 1492 in school and a little bit about the pilgrims.
But he realized that's about all he knew, so he set off on a personal exploration of America's early explorers. A voyage long and strange, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 on 90.7 FM WFAE.
I'm Mike Collins. Restaurants come and restaurants go, but what is the hardest part of running one? Is it getting one started, keeping one going, or deciding the time has come to close the doors? We'll talk about that during Johnson & Wales Chef on Assignment Peter Reinhardt's monthly visit. Peter has assembled a panel of local restaurateurs to talk about the challenges owners face as they start, grow, and maintain a presence in this city's ever-changing culinary landscape. When Charlotte Talks, tomorrow at 9 on 90.7 WFAE. Mid-60s for a temperature today, and cold tonight, upper 30s. They're talking about possible frost in the outlying areas. Around 70 tomorrow, 50 now at WFAE Charlotte, WFHE Hickory, your NPR news source.
From